Good morning. How is the tech ed going so far? Good, almost coming to end. And thanks for staying behind. I saw some of them left this morning. Thanks for staying behind and attending this last few sessions. How many of you attended my session yesterday? That was DBI 316. Okay, thank you. And thanks for coming back. That was about the design patterns, architectures, about what a typical deployment looks like, and what are the best practices. Today, what I'm going to show you is people who have already gone production with some of those architectures. People have already gone production, people who have already are using it for several months, and what does their deployment look like? Make sense? So this is the next step from yesterday. If you have not attended my yesterday session, you can go back and take a look at the recordings or the PowerPoint slides. I'll be happy to take follow-up questions afterwards, after this or subsequently. I will just very briefly give a scheme of things so that you can follow from there, but the details will be in that presentation. And since we'll be talking about real practical deployments, you'll be able to connect them well. Okay. My name is Sanjay Mishra. I work in the SQL Server product team in a team called SQL CAT, and that's why you see the name SQL CAT. The CAT stands for Customer Advisory Team. My job role is to work with customers who are in the bleeding edge of technology. What is bleeding edge is I have a lab engineer who tried to rack a machine and cut his fingers, and he claims he is in the bleeding edge of technologies. So, but the bleeding edge, I'm actually talking about people who are early adopters, people who are willing to try out new things, or people who push the envelope of a typical SQL Server deployment. And my role is to advise them on best practices, on architectures, on things to do, things not to do, and at the same time, learn from them what works well, what doesn't work well, what we need to improve in the product, and things that work well, share with the community like this or white papers or presentations. A little while back, I was showing you a website, sqlcat.com. That's where we publish all of our learnings, best practices, architectures. So you'll see some of me and my colleagues writing things out there. On that, I have a very one-line blog, and that blog says, who is using Always On? So this is this sends you to a link on Microsoft.com case studies website where people who have already gone production with Always On and are publicly willing to talk about those have published some case studies. And those case studies are available from this link. And if you follow the link, you will see about quite a few of them, and you can read them. That's all publicly available. As part of the Denali, which is the code name for SQL Server 2012, how many of you are aware of something called a technology adoption program or TAP? Through that program, we help customers, the early adopters, to evaluate new technology, give us feedback, and at the same time provide the handholding they need to go live on a brand new hotcake product. And I was in charge of giving technical guidance to every single Always On customer who was going production with a pre-release bits. Can you guess how many people went live before release of RTM? Before SQL Server 2000 RTM? Any guesses? About 75 to 80 customers went to production with SQL Server 2012 before it RTM'd. Out of those number, around 40 or 45 are on Always On. From that list of 40-45, I have selected handful 5. I have picked 5 advanced deployments which can help drive the lessons learned for the broader section of customers, and I'm here to share with you those deployments, details about their architectures, what kind of hardware they use, what kind of SLAs for uptime they have, and how do they achieve that. Make sense? Okay, so before we dive into the specific customer, here is setting the stage, and those who attended my last session yesterday will find this slide familiar, and I assume that you know a little bit of what is availability groups and what is failover cluster instances. I'll be happy to talk about foundations or fundamentals of this technology if you need to. Please stay back after the class, but I expect that you know at least a bit of those because these customers already use those. And I have 75 minutes and 5 customer deployments to cover. Each of these deployments can easily take 75 minutes in itself. And to give you full value, I have compressed them, 5 of them into one session. What that means is that I'll have only 3, 4, 5 slides about each deployment. But there is much more to these deployments than what I can show you here. So I'll welcome every single question that you may have. If you want to deep dive, if you want to do whiteboarding about these deployments, feel free to ask me after the presentation here or come to the booth, and I'll be happy to do that for you. And again, some terminology. Always on is not equal to availability groups. How many of you think this is correct? Okay, only 1, 2, 3, okay. So what is always on? Always on is a brand which covers all the high availability technologies either newly released or significantly enhanced in SQL Server 2012. So that involves availability groups as well as failover cluster instances. An availability group is not database mirroring. Database mirroring, as you know, has been there since SQL Server 2005, Service Pack 1. And it has been significantly enhanced over the releases, but not enhanced any way in SQL Server 2012. In fact, it has been declared deprecated in SQL Server 2012. What that means is that it is still available, it is in the product, it will be maintained for next couple of releases, after which it will be gone. So we welcome you to migrate database mirroring applications to availability groups, to take advantage of, for example, multiple secondaries, readable secondaries, groups of database failing over together, one common listener for irrespective of the number of secondaries you have, backup on secondary, and so on and so forth. Okay, so what are the key learnings we got from these customers? You can see a significant amount of always on, which is availability group, is completely new. It's a new concept, new design, new architecture. And hence, we had to repeatedly emphasize a few points to the early adopters. Among this audience, how many of you consider yourself to be a Windows admin or a system admin who deal with the Windows server, clustering, or networking, etc.? And how many of you who do not even touch the Windows side of it? You work specifically, you deal with SQL Server databases, you deal with only the data components. Okay. So here is your opportunity to all come together and join forces. Okay, because always on is combination, is a do both. So for a significant amount of audience who is only pure DBAs, who significantly dealt with DBAs, and those who were the starting audience of the always on thing, we had to say, emphasize a few lessons learned repeatedly. And number one of those is Windows cluster. And number two of those significant emphasis points is also Windows cluster. Number three is also Windows cluster. Number four is also Windows cluster. Number five is also Windows cluster. So what is so impactful, so big about Windows cluster? What is the key lesson that about Windows cluster? Because Windows cluster is the foundation for HA as well as DR in SQL Server 2000 always on. People who are familiar with Windows cluster, people who are familiar with SQL Server clustering, they knew that clustering can be used for HA, for local HA within the data center. Several nodes, active nodes, passive nodes, you can fail over, etc. To drive the point that even the DR, even across data site failover, across data site redundancy is also handled by Windows cluster in SQL Server 2012 always on. And therefore, always on inherits all great things about Windows cluster. It also inherits all the limitations of Windows cluster. For example, every single server participating in a Windows cluster must be running the same version of Windows, must be in the same Active Directory domain. Therefore, every single always on deployment is a Windows cluster deployment. And therefore, if you are either deploying or considering deploying or designing or architecting a solution involving always on, please start working with your system administrator, your people who involve clustering, people who involve networking across sites, because that's very important. This is just an emphasis that you should understand how Windows cluster works to be able to effectively manage, deploy, and operate always on. And key areas that needs to be, all the decks are available for you to download and go through them and share. So picture is probably just not as useful. Key areas are how the quorum models work in a Windows cluster, and how networking across sites work within a cluster, how disaster recovery procedures work in a Windows cluster. For example, force quorum, what are the different quorum models, those one need to understand. And Windows cluster is not equal to SQL cluster. I believe a fair section of this audience understand what is a SQL cluster. SQL cluster is usually referred to as a SQL Server failover cluster instance. When you have multiple nodes sharing a set of disks and failing over between them. SQL cluster also uses Windows cluster, but Windows cluster is not necessary SQL cluster only. Windows cluster can also be a non-shared storage, completely separate set of machines without sharing any storage. Lots of key improvements have been made to Windows cluster specifically for always on. Some of the key enhancements have been asymmetric disk. If you attended my session yesterday, you would understand what asymmetric disk is. Very quickly, asymmetric disk is the way for you to have a subset of machine within a Windows cluster share one or more disk, another subset of the machine share another set of disk, and mutually exclusive. Node votes is a new thing that is introduced in Windows cluster because of always on. And asymmetric disk as a quorum resource. All these things are available in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2, and also in Windows Server 2012. So even if you are Windows Server, you are waiting on Windows Server 2012, all the things that you need for always on deployment are already available in Windows 2008 and Windows 2008 R2 by various service packs or hotfixes, etc. Okay? Any questions? One key area of learning is that in many organizations, including my own, the skill sets of people who deploy and manage high availability of databases are organized as DBAs and system administrator. Usually they're different teams. Is that typically in some of the companies? In some companies it is one and the same team, or one person does all, but in many companies they're separate, organized separate teams. And hence, the skill sets that require, they do not cross-pollinate usually. And always on requires that kind of cross-pollination of skills. So that thing we have to drive some points into several customers. And another challenge was historical experience. People who are familiar with Windows clustering, people who have been using Windows clustering for years, typically think Windows clustering is a shared storage clustering. Oh, you are asking about a Windows cluster? I'll give you a shared storage Windows cluster because you are trying to deploy a SQL failover cluster instance. But that is not necessarily true. Windows cluster can be a non-shared storage cluster. And hence, for the people who have not seen those new enhancements in Windows clustering for last few months, we strongly recommend that please go and read those documentation again, because those documents have been updated. And now new and different tools for you to manage your entire HA and DR topology. There is Failover Cluster Manager, GUI, that is part of the server manager in Windows Server. There is Windows Cluster Log, and the knowledge of PowerShell's cluster.exe will come very handy when you are deploying and managing such a solution. So these are very high level learnings at the top level. I will quickly move on to the specific customer that we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about 5 customer deployments today, and was starting with my own, which is Microsoft's own IT infrastructure, where they the deploy. And the thing I'm going to talk about is a SAP deployment. How many of you deploy SAP, use SAP? And the lessons learned here are not necessarily specific to SAP, but given that this is an SAP deployment, which means that it's a big deployment, it's a complex deployment, it has got very stringent needs. Talk about a company close to home from here, Bwin. Some of you already know Bwin, based in Austria. Then I'm going to talk 3 more companies which are based in the USA. Okay, let's dive onto MSIT, Microsoft SAP ERP deployment. And this deployment is very important to me, especially because this system, it processes my paycheck. So uptime of this is very important for me, especially at the month ends or at all times. And not only this also manages the licensing and other things of Microsoft stuff. So availability is very significant for this deployment. And this is over 6 terabytes in a single central database. Microsoft is spread across many countries and almost about 85 countries are using this central system, which is based in the USA. The key things to note here is that the availability requirements are pretty high. They consistently have achieved 99.995% ever since they have been using SQL Server 2005 database mirroring. And after that, they have upgraded to SQL Server 2012, removed database mirroring, and have installed SQL Server 2012 availability groups. And as you can see, they're pretty significant. These are commodity servers, but pretty significant in terms of size. Four sockets, 8 core each, and 256 gig of RAM for this one central server. And there are more than one server, as you'll see in the next picture. So this is what they used before 2012. They used database mirroring for local high availability. As you can see in the primary site, there are 2 sites and about 100 or 200 miles apart. And on the primary side, there is a primary server, there is a secondary server, and there is a witness, principal mirror witness, forming a high availability in the local data center. And uses log shipping to ship to the DR site, which is 150 or 200 miles away. The DR site also hosts the test environment, which is also using database mirroring to ensure that every pre-production, they all test with database mirroring. And all other servers that you see there are various servers for the SAP application. They used it successfully for many years, and in SQL 2012, they replaced this by availability groups. If you see, then again, very similar, except the role of the servers have slightly changed. 2 servers in the primary data center using synchronous secondary and asynchronous secondary in the DR site, which was actually a log shipping secondary. Now it is using so multiple technologies, database mirroring and log shipping, has been replaced by one technology, which is availability groups, because availability groups can have multiple secondaries. Database mirroring could not have multiple secondaries. So that was one of the prime motivation for them to upgrade to availability groups. And to ensure that any disconnect to the DR site or DR site being completely down does not impact the quorum of the primary site servers, the DR site node has been given a 0 vote. People who attended the session yesterday can relate to that. And what 0 vote means is that for deciding the quorum of the cluster, because if you see the 3 nodes are in one Windows cluster forming the availability group. Now, if anything happens to the DR site or the disconnects between the two sites, only two nodes will be visible, and having a zero votes kind of has no impact on the availability of the primary site. And to become odd votes, a file share witness has also been put. As you can see, on the file share witness has one vote, so there are three votes in this Windows cluster, and all the three votes are on the primary site. If any of the servers in the primary site goes down, the other can take over as the primary and continue shipping to the secondary site, continue availability group data movement to the secondary site. And if the entire primary site down, then they will have a DR procedure. There is a documented DR procedure they will go through by forcing quorum on the DR site and then performing an availability group failover and then bring the DR site up and running. Any questions on this deployment? That's a very typical deployment that we see across for customers. Next comes Bwin. Bwin.party is a company that business is illegal in the USA because they do online gaming and gambling. They're based in Europe here in Austria. And they're one of very popular companies here. They sponsor a lot of sporting events. They do lots of gambling of sporting events. So availability is extremely important for them. What is also important for them is zero data loss, that in no situation data should be lost. Even if an entire data center is out, there should be no data loss. And see, this is involved in online gaming, and this is real money handling. So people put bets using this system, and people want their money back. So if you have lose a bet, there can be legal complications because they can claim whatever bet they put in if you have lost their data. And they call it responsible gaming limitation. So this is a kind of a business term for gaming industry. What this means is that this is the system of record. This is the system of record for all their transactions. There are four servers in the topology. There are multiple availability groups. For the benefits of this session, we'll focus only on one availability group, and you can extrapolate the same concept for other availability groups in the solution as well. They have been consistently achieving 4 nines, 99.98% availability, even including maintenance. Excuse me. And as I mentioned, zero data loss is significant, and you see this has got an even higher priority compared to uptime. Every time there is a failure, they want to be up and running within 10 seconds of recovery time. And the plan for a worst case scenario, even if entire data center is lost, they should be able to still provide this RPO and RTO. They should still be able to provide zero data loss. They should still be able to provide a 10 seconds of failover time. This is what they used prior to SQL Server 2012. So there are three data centers. The two main data centers, data center 1 and data center 2, are based in Austria, 11 kilometers apart. And they have a dedicated high bandwidth network, high bandwidth, low latency network between the two sites. What does that mean is that they use synchronous database mirroring between the two sites. And they have a third site where they put the database mirroring witness. And in case of failure of any of the server, the other server can take over as principal, and it's all automatic. They wanted multiple secondaries, multiple copies of the data, because as I mentioned, even after a data center is down, even after a data center is unavailable or multiple servers are unavailable, they should be able to protect their data. So they keep continuous log shipping copy to one extra at each site. They wanted multiple secondaries, and they got them in SQL Server 2012. And I'll show you the topology diagram in a second. The challenge they used to have in database mirroring configuration is that database mirroring is per database, and there are multiple databases. So if one database fails over, they needed some kind of custom mechanism to ensure that other databases also fail over to the same node, because application expects all databases in the same node. That was a challenge prior to availability groups. And they used to load the data warehouse using log shipping. What that means is that in log shipping, you cannot read if you are restoring. You can put in the standby mode and read, but then you are not restoring anything during that time. Then again, you have to switch back and forth mode. What we gave them is a readable secondary in FLOD groups, so they can continuously read while the restoring is happening in the background. So this is what they use today with SQL Server 2012. Same number of servers, same number of data centers, except the topology changed, because now the four servers in data center 1 and 2 are part of one Windows cluster. The file share witness is in the third data center, thereby being an arbitrator in case of a data center level failure. And FLOD groups provide two synchronous secondaries. The primary is in data center 1, and data center 1 has one sync secondary. Data center 2 has another sync secondaries. So there are zero data loss even if entire data center 1 goes down. Or if entire data center 2 goes down, there's still zero data loss because they have a synchronous copy on top of the primary in each data center. And they wanted one more extra copy for read purpose, and that's an asynchronous data warehouse kind of application reporting, continuous reporting. Make sense? And so what key points to note here is that they use node and file share majority. There are four nodes and a file share, there are total four components of the Windows cluster, and each node and the file share has a vote. So they can survive two things down at any time without any manual intervention. So the two, even one data center goes down, they are still up and running without any manual intervention. That's the key thing they wanted to achieve. The file share being in the third data center facilitates this. Okay. What they achieve by, yes, sir. This is physical hardware. I have an example of virtualized hardware coming next. They're still using Windows 2008 and 2008 R2. In terms of server hardware, same, but they can incrementally upgrade hardware at will. That's the because they have multiple secondaries, then they can upgrade one at a time without taking the whole system down. Correct. Good point. Thank you. Thanks for bringing this up. So if data center 1 is down for, let us say, X amount of time, it will automatically fail over to data center 2 because automatic secondary is on the second data center. And then they will be alerted that, hey, failure and failover has happened. And the secondary, which is labeled at DWH, which is the continuous reporting secondary, that will be converted to synchronous. So they can continue from zero data loss from then onwards. Good point. Thank you. That's one statement. All you need is that from asynchronous to synchronous, synchronous to asynchronous, it's a one T-SQL statement. And that they have scripted it, so they get alerted, the alert executes a script, and script goes and does it. And if somebody wants, they can manually control it as well. Okay, so one interesting thing is that now because all databases fail over together. In case of a failover, they don't have to go manually and see if everything has failover or not. So they can have a consistently faster failover between the data centers. They can now do maintenance. The key maintenance here is because there are multiple sync secondary, even if when they're maintaining one sync secondary, by maintaining they are probably applying a SQL Server patch or a Windows Server patch or upgrading the hardware. They are comfortable because there is at least one other synchronous secondary available to them, so achieving zero data loss. So that simplifies their processes. And they offload backup to the secondaries, thereby taking over the load that backup was causing on the primary, and they take log backups. There is such a high volume transaction rate, they take log backups every minute. In fact, not even every minute, they run log backup in a while loop. One log backup finishes and the log backup starts. So if the log backup finishes in 30 seconds, probably the next one is starting in another 30 seconds. So it is such a continuous loop of log backups. Okay, what are the considerations they had to incorporate when they migrated from database mirroring to availability group solution? As you saw, the database mirroring solution was completely database level, the DBA controlled and the DBA managed, not anymore, because availability group involves Windows clustering and they had to involve other teams to complete the migration. And one interesting thing to note here is that for database mirroring, as you know, connection string provides you the ability to seamlessly failover connection by using failover partner. Are people familiar here with failover partner in the connection string? Availability groups provide you a listener. There is no longer a concept of a failover partner, it's a listener. And the listener across, irrespective of the number of secondaries you have, one listener works for whatever the primary is. So they had to change connection strings to take advantage of the listener, but there are a lot of third party applications where they cannot just go and change connection string. So they had to live with that, or they had to delay some of the applications to come on to come using listener because they cannot could not change the connection string. Before they could upgrade operating system on a machine at their own convenience, because each machine could have a different operating system. One can be running on Windows Server 2008, another could be running on Windows Server 2008 R2, another could be running on Windows Server 2012 when it comes, because it all matters is SQL Server. Now with availability groups, everything is one Windows cluster, all the machines must have the same version of Windows. That brings in another challenge. With SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1, which is coming in a few months' time, we are providing a feature where you can upgrade an availability group solution across different versions of Windows, so that when Windows 8 or Windows Server 2012 becomes released, you will be able to convert. But till that time, this challenge exists. Okay, any questions on BWIN? Thank you. Okay, this is a healthcare company based in the USA called Care Group, and on one side where BWIN is fully entertainment, it's gaming and gambling and all, etc. This is no funny business. This is healthcare. The uptime of the system is critical to the well-being of the patients, and they use SQL Server 2012 always on to achieve the required high availability. This is one of the among top five healthcare systems in the USA. Company is based in the Boston, Massachusetts. Interesting thing to note is that they have been awarded number one rank in most innovative healthcare companies in the USA. They follow a pattern for their systems. They classify the system like most companies classify tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, and therefore provide different level of service for each of those. They call it AAA, AA, and A. AAA is actually a tier 1 in their terminology, and which needs RPO 0, RTO near 0, and they ensure standardized HANDR across all of them. They have around 80 of those systems. They have around 300 or more of tier 2 systems classified as AA, and there they use virtualized. There is a question on virtualized. So there they use virtualized, and the example that I'm going to show here today is one of their tier 2 systems, excuse me, which is using virtualized Hyper-V, and on top of it using always on availability groups. So this is one example of one of their applications, and they have three physical machines spread across two data centers. Two machines in one data center, which is the primary data center, and another machine is on a different data center few miles away. The two machines in the primary data center, they have put those two machines together in a host cluster to be able to achieve live migration, because they use virtualized machines for actual SQL Server. And what each physical machine has, for this example, has one virtual machine for now. In future, they will host multiple virtual machines for different applications so that they can load balance. But for the purpose of this, you see each physical machine has one virtual machine for the corresponding application that we are talking about. And there are total three virtual machines in a Windows guest cluster. The guest cluster is required for availability groups, because the three virtual machines involve in availability group configuration. So you see the first, which is the host cluster, is using CSVs to provide a host cluster, and the purpose of that is provide hardware or OS level of protection for the host. And then there is a guest cluster of the VMs across the three nodes, which provides the infrastructure needed for availability group configuration. Each of these virtual machines is running one instance of SQL Server with its own local copy of the database, and thereby forming availability group configuration. And availability group node 1 is acting as the primary, and a synchronous secondary in the same data center, and an asynchronous secondary in another data center. And thereby they have HA as well as DR, and providing all level of protection, the hardware level protection, the operating system protection, the actual database level protection, including the storage. Fair? Any questions on care group configuration? They could, yes. So that any of the secondary, each of these two secondaries can be readable, and they can offload read capability to any of the secondaries.
Okay, so instead of the async now coming from the A, I can do that from the B.
Yeah, instead of doing A, you can do that from the B. This particular application does not need to do that, but yeah, it is capable. And you can offload your backups also to either B or even to C. So if they will have to do, let us say, server A, which is the physical box A on the left side, if that needs any physical maintenance, they can migrate this VM to the other node on the same machine. So for a short time, the two replicas will be in two VMs, which will be in one physical host. And that is during only maintenance time of the server A. But they're having continuously having three copies and continuously having the availability at the database level they want, and once server A maintenance is complete, they can fail it back. And this failing back of virtual machines from one node to another node is live migration with zero impact on the customer, on the user. Yes. Yeah, so the question is that if I take node A down without thinking about Hyper-V live migration, the availability group will fail over to B anyway. But then there's an availability group failover, you have lost one replica. You have lost one extra copy. So here, this model, what they have achieved is that they can continue to have two copies, even though two copies are running on the same physical box in two different virtual machines. This gives the picture of one application, but think about it when they have multiple applications all being shared across different nodes. So what they will feature add is that they will add more virtual machines on each box for different applications. Someone will be primary on node B, someone will be primary on node A, and distributed so that the primary load is balanced, as well as they return the benefit of failing over back and forth without impacting the user when they do that. Thank you. Now let us talk about another customer, Service U Corporation. The headquarters of Service U Corporation is in Memphis, Tennessee. The company is recently acquired by another bigger company called Active Network. And what Service U does is they're a software as service provider. Through their online website, people can do booking of tickets, they can do event management, they can manage credit card processing, they can do all this kind of, provide all this kind of service to the end customers. And they have a very significant uptime requirements because they have customers in all 50 states in the United States. So they don't have a maintenance window because they have customers in 15 different countries also. There'll be, every country will be doing business using their websites at some point in time. They cannot take a downtime even for major upgrades. They have a total maximum allowable downtime within a year is 52 minutes. And that includes even if they are replacing hardware, even if they had hardware failures, even if they have data center outages, even if they had any kind of tornadoes, earthquakes, whatever it is. 52 minutes in a year, all total. On top of it, they are a level 1 PCI compliance. People aware of PCI compliance? PCI compliance is a payment card industry compliance, and they're level 1, which is the most stringent, topmost level of compliance for payment card industry. Payment card is like a processing of credit cards and debit cards. So a lot of other merchants use Service U services to process credit cards, so that they don't have to be do all the legwork to process credit card and transactions, which means that they have to be extremely secured, not only for their primary data center, but same amount of security on their DR data center as well. And of course, performance, because this is a software as a service provider, so people are accessing their services over the web, must have good performance. The key things to note here is that they ensure that the professionals are well-trained, highly skilled, every single thing is documented and well-communicated across all the teams involved. They treat this as the system of record. This is the tier 1 mission critical system. Every single transaction that earns them money, all 100% of their business is dependent on this system that we are going to talk about. And therefore, this is the holy system, you can say, if you has to be up, has to be secured all the time. This is what they used in pre-SQL Server 2012 days, a failover cluster instance at each data center. They have two data centers, and their data centers are about 500 miles away. At each data center, they used to have a failover cluster instance and use database mirroring between those. So any local failures will be handled within the data center. If the whole data center is down, they will fail over to the other data center. They use 3-node failover cluster instances. How many of you here use multi-node? We see a lot of 2-node failover cluster instances. Anybody uses more than 2 nodes? Yeah, a lot of it. Very good. Good. When you have more than 2 nodes, are you running 1 SQL Server instance or more SQL Server instances? 4? 3? How many instances? This side, there are a lot of you people use multiple nodes. 3? Okay, good. They use 1 SQL Server instance on 3 nodes. The reason for that is there is 1 active server, 2 passive servers, if you see on the left side, and same thing on the right side. The reason is that they are very, very cautious about availability. In case you are taking down 1 node for patching, as you see, they're serving web applications, and they are level 1 PCI compliant. They have to be up to date on all patching all the time. So if you're taking 1 node down for patching, even for those 10 minutes or 15 minutes, they don't want to be exposed to 1 node. So they still have high availability even when you are patching one node. Or even if one node is down because maybe let us say a card burnt or the C drive burnt or whatever, they are replacing that, takes 2 hours, 3 hours time. Even then they have complete redundancy on hardware even during those periods of time. That's why they use a 3 node with a single SQL Server instance. Make sense? So if one node goes down, they still have availability. If 2 nodes go down, they still have availability because one node and the disk is available. As long as one node and the disk is available, they're able without any manual intervention. Let me roll back a bit. If you have a 3-node Windows cluster, what is the default quorum model? Anybody? Node majority. Node majority means that majority of the nodes should be available. So majority out of 3, that means 2 should be available for you to have quorum. That means if one is down and another is also down, you would have lost quorum if you are using node majority quorum model. So that's why they have gone and changed the defaults to use a disk only quorum model. That means as long as one node available and the disk is available, they are up and able to serve. And have ensured that the quorum disk uses the same level of protection as their actual data drives. So that if the quorum disk is down, that means either probably the data drives are also down. In that case, they will fail over to the other data center. But as long as the quorum disk and the data disks are available and one node is available, they are up and running without any manual intervention. Gives them significantly high availability. And this process or this paradigm is called last man standing. Disk only quorum provides benefits, but you must ensure that the quorum disk is adequately protected because otherwise that becomes a single point of failure. Okay, going forward in SQL Server 2012, they wanted to take advantage of availability groups. One significant benefit for them was they have 30 something database, 34 or so databases within their instance. Now, as you know, database mirroring is one database at a time. So when they had to do establish database mirroring, they had to do it 34 times. When they had to fail over database mirroring, they had to do 34 times. So that was painful. So that was one significant advantage they looked for in availability group, because now we can group all 34 in one availability group and then fail over all of them together, establish data availability group together. So, and also they wanted to offload backups to the secondary. They wanted to use secondary readable whenever there is a requirement. And that motivates them to move to availability groups, replacing database mirroring. They wanted to continue to use failover cluster instances for local high availability within the data center. So they have the same thing, 3-node failover cluster instance at each data center, availability group between them. However, availability groups require all nodes in the same Windows cluster. So the nodes in the primary data center, nodes in the secondary data center, all 6 nodes are part of the same Windows cluster. And a few things change because quorum model now impactful across the to data center, network cluster communications impacts because now that goes across data centers, and this is how they handle it. This is now a single Windows cluster instead of one cluster at each site, and asymmetric storage is the key to this architecture. A few minutes back, I touched based on asymmetric storage. So there, the 3 nodes in the primary site, they share one shared storage, which shared storage is not visible to other 3 nodes of the same Windows cluster because they are in the other site. The 3 nodes in the DR site, they have their own shared storage, and that shared storage is invisible to the nodes in the primary site. So this is asymmetric storage. Not all nodes can see all the storage, but still there is shared storage across among a subset of the nodes. Okay, so you need Windows Server 2008 or later. Make sure that you have the corresponding service packs on QFEs installed to be able to achieve this. Now, because the whole thing is one Windows cluster, what quorum model to use? They still want to use last man standing. Now, previously, for disk to be a quorum resource, the disk must be visible to all the nodes in the Windows cluster. not anymore, this has been enhanced, even though it's a bit more complex. You can have an asymmetric disk which is visible to only to a few nodes. You can still use that disk as your quorum resource for the entire Windows cluster. So they have a quorum disk in site 1, they have a quorum disk in site 2, but only one of these two quorum disks is part of quorum at a time, and that depends on which site they are running from. So on their steady state running, they are using site 1, and the quorum disk of site 1 is the quorum they are using. And if there is a disaster, they will manually fail over to the other site, and when they manually fail over, they will change the quorum disk from the disk in site 1. Instead of using that, they will do the disk in site 2, because that's the disk now available. See, so using disk only quorum, to have an asymmetric disk as part of your quorum, you cannot use the failover cluster manager GUI to do that. If it was a symmetric disk, you could use that. If it is an asymmetric disk, you need to use the cluster.exe command line to be able to do that. This is changing, by the way, in Windows Server 2012. This is being much enhanced, but they are still on. Windows 2012 is not released yet. It is a release candidate. They are in production since October last year. So they are using Windows Server 2008 R2SP1. There is a question? Yes. Okay, good point. So the question is, now that availability groups come into picture, what advantage of availability groups are they taking? Why they did not replace their local failover cluster instance failover cluster instance? Why did not they use a availability group? Good question. And the reason for that, they're very comfortable with a failover cluster instance, local failover. They have ensured, and we have a detailed white paper on that, what they have ensured to ensure the high quality of protection for the storage there. And in case of the storage failure, they will fail over to the DR site. They do not have a redundant storage. The redundancy is within the SAN. There is no redundancy outside the SAN, but redundancy within the SAN. So as long as the SAN is completely protected, they're able to provide their service. On the other hand, what benefits provides them is that they continue their processes of maintenance from their previous releases. For example, with a failover cluster instance, the failover is at the instance level. For availability groups, the failover is a subset of database, not your entire instance. So if you have objects outside your database, for example, link servers, jobs, logins, they do not fail over when availability groups fail over. So they don't have to think about those things as long as they are running from the local data center. And they've ensured that the disk in the local data center is protected enough. If the enters SAN fails, yeah, they will fail over to the DR site, where they have, again, a fully protected SAN. Does it make sense? Yeah, it's a point. It's a point. Examples are not different from each other or from the previous? Yeah? No, I'll be happy to talk to you offline. The question there is that why, not just this, but other architectures also, why they're not completely changing their application. And I would like to understand what kind of changes you expect. The basic premise of this is that you need to be able to achieve or extend your availability goals. If your availability goals were zero data loss, faster failover, you cannot compromise them because you are changing technologies. Yes, you can have different number of secondaries, you can replace log sweeping by another availability groups, you can do all this stuff, but if you want to achieve the same level of protection, you got to do that. So even with asymmetric disk as quorum resource, they continue to use disk-only quorum and able to achieve last man standing. Okay, couple of lessons learned with this deployment is now because both sites together are part of the one Windows cluster, the instance names cannot be the same. Previously, they had to use, they use the same instance name for the sake of familiarity, for the sake of consistency. Now they cannot use that anymore because now both the instances are managed in the same Windows cluster, cannot have the same name. So they use a different instance names. And a side effect of having different instance names is the default file path for your data and log drives includes the instance name. And if you use that, that means your file path on your primary side and your file path on your secondary side will be different. And that's not a recommended solution. You should have the same file path, because if you have the same file path, if you add a file on your primary, it automatically gets added on the same path on the secondary. To be able to do that, you be careful whenever you are doing the setup, and you choose, make sure that your file path and your drives that you choose on the two sides are the same, despite the instance name being different. Okay, any questions? Okay, the next example I'll bring up is ESNet. ESNet is a company based in the USA, in the Milwaukee, USA. They provide data services for lots of retail companies. And there are a lot of retail partners that depend on data from ESNet to provide various types of services to their online providers. What they use is that they provide the basic, if you go for Bing shopping site or Google shopping site, you will see the data coming up for different types of items, their properties, their characteristics, their specs, and they all are served by ESNet. Again, a minimum of 4 nines of annual uptime is their SLA, and they have been consistently achieving that. What they use is a slightly different model. They use a technology for storage replication. By using that, they use a multi-site failover cluster instance. And they used that before. What changes in SQL Server 2012 is that they don't need the stretch VLAN anymore. Because in previously, if you use multi-site failover cluster instances, you needed a stretch VLAN. And that improvement has been done in SQL Server 2012 because now you can have IP addresses, different IP addresses from each site. They use EMC recover point as their storage replication between the sites. And they have two sites 850 miles apart. Okay, yeah, we have the picture here. 850 miles apart, two sites. And each site hosting, the combined two sites hosting one failover cluster instance. And what you have is that EMC recover point doing asynchronous SAN level replication to another similar SAN on the DR site. And thereby, on top of this, they have recover point cluster enabler, which can do automatic failover if the node fails on the primary site to the other site. And this failover is at the instance level, because this is completely masked to SQL Server. That this is a SQL Server looks this as a shared storage. It's a failover clusters to a SQL Server, because SAN replication is masking that there are two different storages. They also have on the primary side, they have added a separate set of storage for providing another copy of the data where they want to offload some of the read activity. This is another example of changing their application design to take advantage of availability groups. They are not using availability groups for HA or DR. They're using it to offload some of their read workload. They do not want to run it on the primary server anymore. They can offload it to the secondary. Since it is in the same data center, and they're able to achieve a synchronous secondary that gives them the added protection if they need to be. So the three nodes in the Windows cluster, the two nodes participate in the multi-site failover cluster instance, one node at each site. Another extra node is on the primary site to host the availability group secondary. And we gave example of one SQL Server instance. They have four such SQL Server instances, total 11 terabytes of data across those four instances. Of course, two sites. Each site has different subnets, so it's a multi-subnet setup. They take one extra advantage of SQL Server 2012 is SQL Server 2012 failover clustering now provides TempDB on local storage. Previously, all the storage of your SQL Server instance needed to be shared storage. And TempDB being a shared storage was not much use, because every time there is a failover of the instance, the TempDB is wiped off. And imagine failover from one site to another site, they were unnecessarily using SAN replication to copy all those TempDB data, which will be wiped off anyway. And having TempDB on local storage provides the benefit of using, saves money for replication, because the replication is licensed based on how many gigabytes they use. And if they don't use TempDB for SAN replication anymore, that means they are not replicating those gigabytes of data. And also, it reduces the cross data center traffic, and also enables them to use local solid state devices for the TempDB. So those are very high level discussions on the architectures, and there is more, because I touched the very high level tip of the iceberg of all this deployment. I'll be happy to take any questions. And if you want to deep dive into any of the specific deployments, I can do that. If you want to have any other generic questions about how any of these technologies work, I'll be happy to take that. Questions? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, the previous ESNet, yes, they have, and this is one of the reasons why they are not using availability group for HA and DR. They have multiple databases, and they have cross database transactions that need to be protected whenever there is a failover. Availability group failover does not ensure that your data in the different databases are in sync, and therefore, instead of using availability group, they're using SAN level replication and multi-site failover cluster instance, which supports DTC. The question is, will that be added to availability groups anytime? It's an important ask that we receive from customers a lot, and it's on our table. Not sure yet when we can get to that, but definitely on our radar, it's a very important ask. Yes. Yeah. Okay. The question is, for the legacy applications, is there any specific requirement? By legacy applications, if I understand correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, that means you're using older client drivers. So availability groups introduces availability group listener. Multi-site failover cluster instance also provides multi-subnet failover support. Availability groups provide you readable secondaries, for which we have a new keyword in the connection string, application intent equal to read only. If you specify application intent equal to read only, your connection will go to a readable secondary, and thereby you are not using your primary anymore. But those are provided only in the new drivers. The new drivers means the new SQL native drivers, the new JDBC driver, the new .NET drivers. We have backported these functionalities to the older .NET drivers. For example, we have backported it to .NET 4.0, .NET 3.5. So if you use any of those, you are good. You can make advantage of those, provided you can make those changes in your connection string. Okay. If you cannot make those changes in the connection string, that means you will probably be using the old drivers, old connection string. You can still use always on availability group on your for your database server with a couple of restrictions. That means you will not be able to use the read intent anymore, but you can connect to a readable secondary. You can directly connect to a readable secondary and query. That doesn't prevent you from doing that. Number two, if you want to use your old connection strings which use database mirroring, if you remember, database mirroring had a server name equal to server A, colon failover partner equal to server B. If you have those connection strings and you cannot change them to the new, then we recommend that you have only one secondary. One primary, one secondary. It's similar to database mirroring, but you're using availability groups. And so those connection strings will continue to work. And in future, when you have opportunity to upgrade the driver or upgrade the connection string, you can take full advantage. So summary is, older drivers still works. The functionality is slightly limited. Know what are your limitations, know what are your plans to migrate, and then adopt accordingly. Any more questions? Yes. Sorry? Sorry? Replication along with availability groups? Okay. So the question is, if I have replication, which I may understand is transactional replication and availability groups. So there are transactional replication works with availability groups. There are certain considerations. Your publisher can be part of availability group. If you have a publisher database, it can be availability group. You can have primary, secondary. Primary can fail over and publisher will continue to function without any intervention. Secondary can also be part of its own availability group. But when your availability group failover happens, the secondary to resume receiving the transactions again, you have to execute some manual commands. And we have published those commands in books online. You have to find out what LSN last time it used, and then you start from that LSN. So that also you can do. Transactional replication has another component called distributor. The distributor cannot be part of availability group as of today. And there is one more ask that we got a lot from customers, that please support distributor to be part of availability group so that they can do DR for the distributor. It's again on our priority list. It's on our radar, on our table. We're working through it. We don't know when we'll be able to provide that support yet. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any more questions? Does any of these examples resonate with you, resonate with something that you use today or you'll be using in future? Anything that you want to use or will be using in the field that is not covered here, maybe something that can relate to your question. You have probably a design pattern in mind. Probably these examples do not provide that. I probably can bring up from my other customer examples to address that. Okay, very good question. The question is, do you see you can move away from the traditional SAN technology by using availability group, because availability group provides you protection of your storage, complete protection of your storage? And yes, and I have customer who was doing that. I have customer who have been using traditional failover cluster instance before, and they have got rid of that and now using the availability group technology. By using availability group technology, they can have a local storage. They can have Fusion I/O or other solid-state devices as their database drives, and they can have multiple copies of those to provide local protection, DR protection, everything. Definitely, yes. So another good question is that how does Hyper-V play a role in you have a underlying cluster of the host machine level and then another cluster on this another level. In that example, the purpose of using the host level clustering was to provide live migration. If you do not require live migration, if you are happy with completely availability group level failover, yes, you can completely get rid of the host level clustering and use only guest level of clustering and use local storage for each of these Hyper-Vs. That particular example, what I showed here, there is only one application, so there is one database on each Hyper-V node. In future, that customer is planning to have, so those boxes are actually huge boxes. And the application that is running on there right now is using only tiny part of the hardware. And they plan to use six instances, six Hyper-V on each of those physical boxes to host, to consolidate in a private cloud environment six different applications. And what they want to do is load balance, because if some application is needing more resources, they can move those across the different boxes and achieve their other IT goals, which are beyond just high availability. There's other IT goals of load balancing, of maximizing the hardware usage, consolidating into a set of machines instead of each application having their own hardware. So those goals are being provided that. But when it comes to a pure SQL Server level availability, it is all availability groups. It is all independent, non-clustered, non-shared storage, independent local disk. Does that resonate with what you're expecting? Any more questions? Yes, sir. And then I'll come to you. Wonderful. Yeah, wonderful question. Is it possible to include Windows Azure into this? It's in our thought process. It's a frequently asked question. This is my first visit to Amsterdam, and a couple of days back I went to Rotterdam to meet one of our early adopter customers, and they asked exactly the same thing, is that they don't have a DR site yet, and what they want is that, hey, since Azure is their data center already available, I don't have to go invest in another data center at all. Can I use Azure as my one secondary and put my secondary there? It's in our thought process. Is being asked often these days, and we are looking into it. So, as you know, in Windows Azure, you can have a VM, and future that VM can be something, can be used for something, but nothing concrete yet. But definitely in our thought process. Thank you. Yes, sir. Okay, good. Thank you. Very good question. I did not mention something about contained database. So contained database, as you understand, availability groups provide protection for the user databases only. Anything that is outside the user database, such as logins, such as jobs, your link servers, etc., are not protected by availability group. You have to have some custom mechanism to fail them over. Contained database is a new feature introduced in SQL 2012, which encapsulates logins into the database. So if you have defined your user database as a contained database, that means it contains the logins. When that user database fails over as part of availability group, your logins also fail over. But that's only logins. In future, we have the goals to incorporate other such objects, such as jobs, so that they can fail over also. But today, in SQL Server 2012, only contained database, so you can take advantage of logins by using contained database. And in future, maybe more. Excuse me. No, the question is, does contained database include in own tempdb? No. Today, contained database only encapsulates the logins. And tempdb is also a good idea going forward, but not yet. Yes. The question is how is what is the impact of reindexing on the primary database? As you know, availability group is the synchronization is maintained by log. You do an action here, logs are generated, the logs are being sent to the secondary. Thank you very much. Thanks for those who are leaving. Please fill your evaluations. So if you using any index maintenance on your primary, that generates logs and those logs are transmitted. Be aware that sometimes index rebuild can generate lots of logs, and that lots of logs needs to be transmitted. So use that consideration in the mind. Same thing as database mirroring, not different. Any more questions? Yes. Good question. The question, how about writing in the secondary? The secondaries are readable, okay? And they're not writable. At least as of now, not possible. Yes. Okay. Another very good question. So can I have different sets of indexes on the secondary? As of now, no. And the reason for that is the primary and the secondary are exact physical copies of the databases, page by page. Every single page on the primary is exactly looks on the secondary. There is no different. All the pages in all the databases that are part of availability groups. So if you have allow you to create different indexes, that means those page structure will change, which will not be able to maintain. But your ask is important because now you, because secondary is readable workload which may need different indexes. So what I have seen some customers do is that they create those indexes on the primary as well. So that they exist on the secondary. Secondary workload uses those indexes. Primary workload uses different indexes. It is an extra overhead maintaining more number of indexes, but it's a trade-off because it gives, at the same time, gives you high availability, disaster recovery protection, gives you continuously readable data. Can I live with some extra indexes? The advantage of having the exact same physical structure page by page is, anytime you have a page corruption on your primary or even on your secondary, behind the scene we go and we replace the page from another secondary who has a uncorrupted page of that. And we're able to do that because we 100% sure that the page number this here on this file dot this page or on this segment here is exactly the way that look the corresponding page there. And then we can swap that behind the scene without impacting you or you doing anything. So that's called automatic page repair. It is part of the product by default. Sure, absolutely. More questions are good. You are asking very good questions. Okay. The same thing on update statistics. We provide different statistics though. So statistics are automatically generated. If your read workload needs a different statistics, we will generate the statistics. And statistics are not part of the thing. We put that on TempDB. TempDB on the secondary. No, explicitly if you run, then you run it on the primary. Then those statistics will flow from primary to the secondary. If we are doing any automatic statistics, because let us say you are doing a different type of query on the secondary that was never done before, and SQL Server Optimizer decides that I need to run I need to get statistics on these columns this way. It will generate the auto statistics because auto statistics is also on by default. That means those statistics will be generated and stored in the TempDB temporarily to serve those queries. And if you see that, okay, hey, these statistics needs to be permanent, you can query TempDB. We provide you DMV to find out what all new statistics, temporary statistics have been created. And then you manually create them on the primary. So then they stay in the system, they stay in the primary, they stay in the secondary, and they're maintained for you. But on the spot, if a secondary workload needs statistics, we do not punish your that stat query because we cannot create a statistic. We create a statistics, we store it in a TempDB, and give you a indication that hey, we have a statistics, and then you go and create it. Did you attend there was a full session on readable secondary on Wednesday? Okay. Don't worry, the recordings and the PowerPoints are all there. All these details, exact details, the name of the DMVs, how to find out the statistics, when this happens, are all there in the presentation. So I strongly encourage you to go and see that. The question is, if I fail over to the secondary, shall I build the statistics? There is no need to build the statistics. So if you have the statistics that will be lost are the temporary statistics. Because when you fail over, everything is initialized and the TempDB is gone, and then you need to know. So therefore, what we recommend is that if you have a read workload on the secondary, time to time go and look your temporary statistics and have them created on the primary so that when the failover happens, you have the statistics all taken care. Make sense? Yeah. Any more questions? Yes. Another good question. Is it good to use always on features with Windows 2008 or Windows 2012? Your choice. Okay. So all the things that are necessary for always on to work are provided in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2. And it takes us a lot of effort to backport this, and we have done those things. So as in previous few slides, I showed asymmetric storage, node votes, all these things have all been backported even to Windows Server 2008. So if you're running on Windows Server 2008 today or Windows Server 2008 R2, you are covered. You have all. Windows Server 2012 provides all these plus a few things more. So if you upgrade to Windows Server 2012, you can take some extra benefits. But all those always on things that you saw today are all available in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008. As long as you are running SQL Server 2012, you're good. Yeah.
Is it possible to
give priority for? So the question is, if you have multiple availability groups in my setup and one instance hosts the primary of multiple availability groups, can I prioritize between them? Not today. But what you can do is that for your critical ones, you can say these are synchronous. And the other ones, you can say these are asynchronous. So that way you will be able to, and you can decide synchronous, asynchronous at an availability group level for each secondary. So you can say for this availability group, this secondary is synchronous. For other availability groups, for other secondaries, asynchronous, that way you can play with that a bit. Yes? So the question is, these examples, do they use enterprise? Yeah, they use all enterprise licenses. Always on availability group requires you enterprise license. Before they also they use enterprise license. So the only difference is that database mirroring synchronous was available in standard edition. And that is still there, but only database mirroring instant. If you want to use availability groups, you got to be using enterprise edition. Any more questions? Yes. So the question is, do I need to pay extra license for the read-only? Any active secondary, and by active I mean either you are using it for readable or you are using it for backup. If you are using a secondary for backup or readable, you've got to have a license on those. Because of licensing or because of just in general?
For SPLA, it's 4 times more expensive than standard. Okay.
That's a good question. This is a question mainly for our marketing people. So I encourage you to stop by the booth and ask this to our marketing people. But as far as technology is concerned, this technology gives a lots of value props, lots of value additions, and therefore we see a lots of customers migrating to availability groups to take advantage of that. And but your question is valid. It's a marketing, please come by the booth. It's for. So the question is there a way to calculate the bandwidth we need to? So that this is a simple thing. The logs are being transferred from primary to secondary. Amount of log you generate, you should be able to transfer them. So today, if you are not using anything, you can go to your database and see how much log you generate. So we have counters like log bytes flushed per second. So at your peak workload, you measure that over a period of time. That way, that gives you that, okay, on a peak workload, I generate this much amount of log. if I add availability group secondary, I should be able to transfer this amount of log real time. And that gives you an idea. And this is a function of your workload, because some workload may be generating little amount of log and some workload may be generating a lot of log. And one important thing to note is that we compress the log when you send. It's a, by default, automatically always enable compression of log. So the compressed and over the network. Does that answer your question? And that's again, the question is, for synchronous mode, what latency is tolerable? That's again a function of your workload. Because as you know, for synchronous, the log records for that transaction has to go right to the local log drive, go to the synchronous secondary log, write it there, acknowledgement comes back. And there will be latency. It depends on your network, depends on how fast you are able to write to the logs on the secondary and acknowledgement back. That generates, that dictates what will be impact. So what we recommend, there is no hard and fast, there is product provide you whatever you have. So whatever latency you have, whatever bandwidth you have, we don't restrict you to each any. So what you should do is that you test your application with your given network and given hardware and see what is the impact. And that we will be able to determine that. Because some customers have, as I showed here, BWIN is using synchronous across 11 kilometers apart. Some other customers are, you have data centers which are far, far away, and synchronous will not be practical for those deployments. Yes? Oh, is there a question there? No, okay, sir. Yeah. So the question is, resource governor, does it impact availability groups? The resource governor is transferring to availability groups, so you can use them together however you want to control your CPU and your memory and resources. No. You can use it as it is. It doesn't have to be in the same way. You can control your resource governor the way you want. Yes. If you did not have synchronous and suddenly you turn on synchronous, yeah. Is that the question?
Yeah.
If you did not have synchronous and you suddenly turn on synchronous, you know that all your log records now have to be written to the secondary acknowledgement coming back. So you are putting extra latency into your transactions.
Yeah.
So you should measure that. If the network is perfect, the speed of light is not hindrance anywhere, your storage on the other side is very high performant, you may experience very little impact. If all these things are not going in your favor, you may experience more impact.
Sure. But,
you can measure that. The important thing, you can measure that. We provide you performance counters. You go to availability group perform. Are you familiar with perform?
Yeah.
So if you go to availability group perform, we provide you counters so that you can actually measure it, how much is the impact. That way you can determine, hey, is it worth, is it not, and then you can have a discussion within your application team. And then that would also say, hey, do I need to upgrade my network? Because now I need synchronous. So, yeah, we provide you all those metrics. Any more questions? I think we have already overshoot the time, and I am seeing some signals here. And I thank you so much for staying back. I'll be in the booth. If you have more questions, I'll stay outside to allow the next speaker to come in and do their stuff. So feel free to come there with me and I'll... Session has to end now. I can stay inside?
Yeah, you can stay inside.
Oh, okay. Thank you.